It's Song Talk Radio with Michael, Neil, Phil, and the gang.
Welcome to Song Talk Radio. This is a show with songwriters talking to other songwriters about the craft of songwriting. We share tips, tools, and techniques, and together we all become better at writing songs. I'm your host, Neil Modi, and with me are the woke members of the Song Talk Radio Action Team. We have Fast Fashion Phil.
I'm woke and happy, I guess.
Yes, you are. And we have Marginalization Mike.
Great to be here, and hopefully I'll be able to, speak for many more people.
That's right.
This is one of the weirder ones you had this time.
Yeah, well, it's one of those days. Please send your comments and questions to at Song Talk Radio on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram, or feedback at songtalk.ca, and we'll share them on the show. And please visit us at songtalk.ca to find out how you can be a guest. And before we get to tonight's very special guest, just a quick shout out once again to our good friend of the show, Julian Taylor, who has won the Solo Artist of the Year award from Canadian Folk Music Awards. So congratulations, Julian. Way to go.
Awesome.
That's terrific.
His latest album is really fantastic. Definitely recommend you guys check him out.
And if anyone happens to be watching on YouTube, we do want you to like and subscribe, because that makes more people able to see the show.
That's right. See us in little
Sounds
boxes.
Perfect. And happy birthday, Bob Dylan.
Oh, do you want to go in on a card with him? Or?
I already sent
his mailing address.
I didn't send him anything this year. Jeez.
I saw it was Sir Ian McKellen's birthday today, too.
Yeah, but he's not much of a songwriter, so.
He could be. He's still got...
That's true. I don't really know him that
well. He could very well be.
Well, he needs to listen to the show.
Yeah, that's right. So. Him and everyone else.
Indeed.
Okay, and so today we are very pleased to have Juno Award-winning Canadian songwriter, artist, author, and Much Music original VJ, Christopher Ward. Christopher has recorded a new take on his most recognizable song, the Billboard number one hit, Black Velvet, which is now available. Welcome to Song Talk Radio, Christopher.
Gentlemen, how are you?
Perfectly.
Thank you for welcoming me. Nice to be here.
Nice to have you on the show. So I'm curious. Black Velvet, you co-wrote with David Tyson, and Alana Miles recorded it, and it was a massive number one hit in 1990. What prompted you to revisit this song now in 2021?
Well, I hadn't made an album in about 30 years, and I thought, it's high time. There was some uncertainty on my part about recording this, because it is so well known and people love Alana's version, justifiably so. But the guys I was working with went, no, you're doing it. So there really wasn't any choice for me. So I just had to find a way into it that was a little bit different than, the original version. And there are so many versions of this song out there, but they're mostly by women. So that did give me a bit of a lane to go on. But I just went back to how it felt when I wrote it. It was like a sort of front porch, foot on the floorboards, kind of, acoustic guitar. Just, I'm sure, kind of what the neighbors heard when I was writing it upstairs all those years ago, right? Just, and then the song is born from that.
Had you been like playing around with it over the years, like just singing it just for the heck of it, on your own or whatever?
Rarely. The only time I ever did it, was probably, like at a writer's night, writers in the round kind of thing. Hmm. So there would have been, like one of those every 5 years. That's not doing it very much, is it? So.
Did you have to fight against an urge to reinterpret it in terms of like rewriting it? Because there's always... in all of our songs, there's always that one bit you go, I think that goes on a bit too long, or, there's something. Did you have to fight the urge to kind of tweak it a bit, or did you just do it straight, structure-wise?
I think structurally it's pretty much the same. I didn't do like what the 80-year-old genius would have done with it had it been his song, which is completely, put it in the spin cycle and then pull it out and go, everybody else goes, what's that? I mean, I took one of the choruses off the end because I didn't need to kind of ramp it up that way. Mm. We didn't really, structurally, it's really, really similar. The intro is a little bit different, but the chord changes are the same. I didn't mess with the melody at all because, you know, you can do that, and especially with a blues-based song. There's, you know, just an infinite number of places you can go with that. But I think that would have made it a less pleasurable experience for people, honestly.
Thank you. I've often gone to, you know, my heroes and seen them play live, and they've played the same song like 5 kajillion times. They're a bit bored with it. And then they start kind of playing around with it, and you're going, that's not what I want to hear, because it's almost never better.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, do you still want to hear Bob Dylan sing like a Rolling Stone like he did in 1965? I would.
Yeah,
I mean, but if you go to see the Rolling Stones, you're gonna get Tumbling Dice exactly as it was created all those years ago. So,
sometimes it's the sort of thing where you hear a song, you know, especially when you're growing up, and you don't realize it's a cover until many, many, many years later, and then you can't help but like the original one that you heard, even though it's a cover song.
Yeah, that's true too. That's true. Yeah.
You know, but I mean,
well, I don't think Alanis version is the cover. To me, I'm covering my own song. It's what's happening.
Yeah,
here.
That's kind of the weird thing, which is why you're kind of allowed to tweak it if you wanted to. But yeah, I mean, was it really because of the notoriety of the song itself and because it's so well known, or in your view today, is it still a perfect song and didn't need anything?
You mean the reason why I didn't change it?
Yeah.
I just couldn't think of anything. I couldn't think of anything that would make it better. I mean, I pretty much sculpt my songs. I'm not one of those guys that just tosses it off and goes, mm-hmm. Well, the first idea is the best idea. I mean, we've all heard that theory before. Mm-hmm. Mostly, I think it's bunk. I think working on something, if you are patient and come back at things, they can, you know, incrementally improve. And I mean, there's a million songs being written every day that are kind of like, you know, 87% good. I mean, why not go for the gusto, right?
Did you do a lot of editing on the song? I mean, it's a long time ago, I know, but.
On the original?
Yeah.
In terms of what was the process, Chris? Yeah. Like, where did the idea come from? Was it lyrics first or a melody?
Well, it's our old alma mater that was responsible for sending me to Memphis, Tennessee on the 10th anniversary of Elvis's death. They put me on a Greyhound bus with 40 Elvis fanatics and a cameraman, so that's a recipe for fun, I think, you know. So we kind of followed their experience through the whole, you know, Elvis world, went into Graceland and did all that. And I was never like a huge Elvis fan. I liked his music, and admired him as an artist. His achievements are considerable, but it wasn't heart and soul my music. I grew up with the Beatles and the Stones and Bob Dylan, you know? So it was a matter of seeing their passion for this artist and how personal it was and what it meant to them. I mean, there were people that, like three generations of women, for example, who every year on that day get on a bus and spend their 1 week of holiday from work going to Memphis year after year after year. And I just, the secret to the song lies in that one line in the chorus, the new religion that'll bring you to your knees. Because I was reading this book in which, this is really getting into the weeds, if just so if you know.
That's what this show is all about.
So we like.
It's the weeds. Okay, well, we can't weeds. Smoke and we can get into them. this woman was writing about Elvis's relationship with his mother, who was the principal figure in his life as a child. And so she went to Tupelo, where he was born, went to the church where they worshiped every week, and witnessed the preacher falling down on one knee and just exhorting the congregation, you know, and all the hallelujahs and stuff that came. And what clicked in her mind was that it looked like Elvis's stage moves all those years later, how he would fall to one knee, you know, with the microphone in one hand and do that whole thing. And, you know, I looked at a couple of concerts of his, and it was like, oh, it was a click. This thing just linked and fell into place for me. And that, and I, my theory on songwriting, or one of them, is that if you have that one key line, it doesn't have to be the title line, it doesn't have to be the opening line, although that's hugely important. If you have a key line, it's like you, it's a portal into which you pass through, you pass through into the rest of the song for me.
What was that line for the song? Was it the one,
the new religion?
Yeah, the new religion that'll bring you to your knees. Yeah.
When you were writing it, did you are you someone who is constantly editing and tweaking, like the words and the placements, and are you that kind of a approach to songwriting?
Yeah, I'm annoying. I do go over things in some detail. But it's more the sore thumb theory. In other words, if something is not quite right, you know, and you know, you can come up with a million justifications as to why you should accept what you've got, but I can't. It's just, it's like somebody scratching at me. I have to deal with it, you know? And but I do know when things are done. Things that, you know, you trust your instincts. I mean, after you've been doing it for a while, there is a feel that goes with that sense of completion.
Yeah.
As someone who's never written a hit song, did you know it was going to be a hit when you wrote it? Like, was it sort of something special, or?
I had no idea. I don't know.
I remember you playing it for me when we were doing a shoot once, and the cameraman also had a band. I remember it was on the third floor of a house, and Claude Barnes was the cameraman. He also had a band at the time, and you played it, and it, like, was a great song, but there was no, I'd never imagined it would be such a huge hit. Because everybody close, like, oh yeah, I got my song too. And it's like, it's not quite the same thing.
Wait, was this way back? Was this like before Alana Miles?
It was Alana's version of it. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I guess I wrote it for her. I mean, the Elvis anniversary was in 87. So basically I made notes when I was on the Greyhound bus and then came back and sort of started weaving lyrics together and working out the music for it when I got back. So it would have been the summer, like August of 87. The way that it came up for her was odd, because Dave Tyson, who was her producer, said to the two of us one day in a session, was like, you know what, it'd be great if we had a shuffle for this record, because we all love that feel. And I said, well, I got this thing I've been working on. And I played them the verse and chorus of Black Velvet. And Alana was like, yeah, that's mine. You know, she just was all over it and just started wailing on it, like instantly, you know, the moment it was birthed. And Dave said, well, do you have a bridge for the song yet? And I said, no. And he said, well, do you mind if I have a crack at it? I said, no, go ahead. So he wrote the music for the bridge, and then I wrote the lyric for the bridge. So that's how that happened. Yeah.
How did it feel as a songwriter to have a number one hit? Like, was it, you feel justified, inspired? Or
blanking believable, Michael. It was stunning. It was just, I mean, I'm one of those guys, too, that as a kid, like, I collected charts, you know, the top 40 chump charts, right?
Yeah. CFT. And,
yeah, well, whatever your, you know, chart du jour was, it was like, it mattered to me, like, where songs got. I was like cheering on my favorites, like watching your favorite baseball team go on a winning streak and then going up the standings, you know? There was a book, this is really shallow of me, but there was a book called The Billboard Book of Number One Hits. And every number one song had one page in the book. And one of the first things I thought of when the song went number one is like, I'm going to be in the book, you know,
I'm going to get my page.
I know, but it's so trivial to say that, but you asked, and the truth is that it really mattered.
Yeah, I would think so. And it's some people talk about visualizing, like, you know, you could visualize your page in that Billboard book, and it came to be.
It's funny that you would choose that term, because you know my relationship with Alana from years ago. I mean, we were a couple, and we actually broke up while we were making the record in tried and true fashion, you know. Yeah. Although in the case of she and I, we really became better, because we were better collaborators than boyfriend, girlfriend, as we sort of came to realize. So we carried on the musical part of our relationship, which was the, you know, the best part. that obviously worked out. But mm-hmm. she used to say to me, and Mike, I suspect you know, even peripherally knew her well enough to know this is true. She would say to me every day, "You're going to write me a hit song. Mm-hmm. I know it." And it was almost like there was a little tiny or else at the end of it, right? You know? but not really.
She was a force of nature. Like her belief in that and what you guys were doing was so strong. It was great.
That's precisely it. And she believed in me when many others didn't, even friends of mine, because, you know, we'd been banging our heads on the wall trying to get things going for her for about 7 years before we got her a record deal. Mm. And, you know, that's a long time. She was already in her 30s. And it was like, you know, is this ever going to happen? And the other thing she would say every day was, you know, when am I going to have a record deal? And my answer is, I'm working on it. You know, so, but, well, what can I say? The wait was worth it, huh?
So do you have an approach to choruses that you like to work with? I mean, do you like to jump to the four or the five, or is it kind of really open, or?
Well, I if I could do it differently every single time, I would. I don't want one song to sound like the previous one. I mean, you know, we work within a reasonably limited palette of changes, when chord changes, when it comes to writing pop music, you know, unless you're Stevie Wonder. So there are going to be certain things that echo down through the songs, but I intentionally do things to try to change it up each time, whether it's switching over to the piano or changing what key I'm writing it in, just moving the capo up and down, or you know, I mean, even little things like that can make a song feel sort of fresh for the moment and send you down a different route with it. But I don't write the chorus first always. Every once in a while there's a chorus there and I build a song back out from that, but just as often I'll start with an opening line, which to me is really hugely important. It's the scene setter, the table setter. It's got to establish the mood of the song, right? I told the story before, but my favorite songs were like Southern songs, which is Black Velvet sort of falls into that genre, I guess. Mm-hmm. You know, and they all had those lines like, you know, it was the 3rd of June, another sleepy, dusty Delta day. It's like, I know where I am. I know how I feel. It's like, you know, everything is just, it's established by one line. You know, Billy Ray was a preacher's son. When his daddy would visit, he'd come along and it's like, you're in. And that's the kind of opening. And if I can come up with a line where I feel like, okay, I'm in, then the process is a whole lot easier.
Do you think they're still doing that in modern songwriting as much?
You mean being analytical like we are?
Well, not so much analytical, but that approach to like the opening line as being, you know, as finally
to modern
crafted.
Pop songs?
Yeah.
With the
like,
top
like being
line
that much
the...
being that much tied to a sense of place or sense of the, like you say, not exactly the mood of the song, but where it sort of lives in the earth, you know.
Well, you know, this is a good question. I guess I would like to believe that there are still, you know, practitioners of the craft. I would say Taylor Swift is one of those. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can't quote you opening lines from her songs, but she has a very strong sense of specific lyric detail that I think enriches her work increasingly over the years. And I mean, these last two records that she put out, and they're more subdued musically, so you really get a chance to focus on the lyric a lot more than you would have, say, on the previous ones. And it's, you know, there are still people out there who want to do that kind of work. With this type of music, I think, Mike, that you were referring to, that's, you know, sort of assembled digitally. Mm-hmm. Yeah. More like a, you know, this like a cake where you throw all the ingredients in one after the other. That's different, because I mean, so many times like a vocalist will come in who's in charge of the hooks for that day, and you know, they'll literally just ad lib a bunch of stuff for half an hour or an hour or whatever, and then the producers will go, okay, thanks, and then you know, the thing will be finished and it will not sound even slightly recognizable to them, because the producers will have gone and, you know, chosen a phrase here and a phrase there and moved some things around and then, you know, copied them and then flew them into out, you know, other sections of the song. It's a producer's business in that respect now, less of a composer's business. So, you know, but everything changes. It's cool.
It will be interesting to see what lasts, because when you think of the Great American Songbook, it was mostly written by, you know, a composer and a lyricist. A lot of them were, you know, you had people who just specialized in that one thing. And it'll be interesting to see what lasts the test of time. I mean, we don't know what will, but it'll be interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I can't even speculate about today's music. I mean, you know, I think Taylor Swift will endure. I mean, because she was a pop phenomenon. I think Drake will have a place at the table in the future, you know. Maybe Adele, Beyonce. I mean, all the acts that are the most popular will. And I don't know whether there are any generalizations you could make about, say, those four artists or not.
Shall we take a listen to the song, perhaps?
Before we get to it, I had a question for you about the recording of this. Now, you recorded this album, I think, I don't know if it's all the songs, but in a different way, and it's kind of funny because it's Dylan's birthday today, but in a kind of a Dylan-esque way, where you had the songs and the players came in, you gave them the charts, and they just did it in the studio without having heard it before. Is that right, for all of them?
Yeah, and not only that, there weren't any charts.
Charts.
No, you know what? This was what I wanted to do, and I got to say, I was very strong-willed about it, and people sort of bought in as we went along in the process. It was me that got nervous as we got close to the recording session as to whether this was the right approach. But I wanted to do it kind of like Motown, Muscle Shoals style, where, you know, somebody brings in the songs, runs them down, musicians make their own notes or charts, whatever they want to do. And then you start running it. And as soon as it starts sounding good, you start pressing record. And as soon as it sounds really good, you move on to the next song. And that's the way we did this. We've got 13 songs in 4 days doing it that way. But you have to have great musicians who are willing to go on that trip with you, who are willing, you know. And I remember one of the guys, you know, said, you know, I got to say that I was really nervous about doing this way, because that's not how I do it. And that's not how, you know, most people do. It's usually stuff is like arranged and demoed, and it's basically, you know, kind of do a version of this. But I didn't want that. I mean, I did this record for reasons of joy. I didn't do it, you know, to become a pop star. God knows. I mean, Shawn Mendes is not looking over his shoulder as we speak, worried, just worried sick, you know, about that Ward guy coming up on the left, you know. I mean, I did this because it was something that seemed like the right thing to do at the time. And because I'd written a bunch of new songs that felt really good, that I was enjoying finishing and singing by myself. And so, you know, I just thought, oh, well, you're going to do this record, do it however you want. And if it flies, great. If it falls, then that's fine. You know, you tried. That's how we went into it.
It sounds like a really exciting way to make music, to have great players and then just see what happens.
It's a really interesting
approach.
What a
nice way to be surprised.
It's a really interesting approach to collaboration, because you're in a room with people who are not going to say no. They're going to say yes, and not only are they going to say yes to your approach, but they're going to say yes and this, and I can add this, and I can, instead of just saying yes to it, like actually embrace it and run with it, right? Like that's an amazing thing to have.
Well, they were those guys, no question, as were the two guys that co-produced it with me, Aaron Chaturvedi and Luke McMaster. These are guys that I've been writing songs with for many, many years now, and I needed their considerable talents right from the beginning. I needed them to buy in to sort of get the momentum for this thing to really go. And then and they had to buy into that approach as well, which they did. You know, you get people kind of when they don't know where they are and they're not certain of what's coming next, you get really good ideas from people when they're on the edge of their seat and it's exciting and it's unresolved and, you know, it's all sort of gelling in front of their eyes. They have to really focus on each other's playing because everybody plays together at the same time. This isn't one of those, you know, drummer goes in, bass player goes in, you know, one at a time. This was everybody in a room together, one, two, and in, you know? So, yeah, it was great.
So much more fun, too. Mm-hmm.
So much fun. So much fun. Yeah.
Okay, let's have a listen to Black Velvet by Christopher Ward.
Mississippi, in the middle of a dry spell, Jimmy Rogers on the Victrola up high. Mama's dancing, she got baby on her shoulder. The sun is setting like molasses in the sky. The boy could sing, he knew how to move everything. Always wanting more, he leave you longing for black velvet and that little boy smile. Black velvet and that slow southern style. A new religion that'll bring you to your knees. Black velvet, if you please. In Memphis, where music's like a heat wave, white lightning bound to drive you wild. Mama's baby's in the heart of every schoolgirl. Love me tender, leave him crying in the aisles. The way he moved, it was a sin, so sweet and true. Always wanting more, he leave you longing for black velvet and that little boy smile. Black velvet and a slow southern style. A new religion that'll bring you to your knees. Black velvet. Every word of every song that he sang was for you. In a flash, he was gone. It happened so soon. What could you do? Oh, what could you do?
Awesome version.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
I wanted to ask about
thanks so much.
So it's verse, chorus, and then your second verse has got that neat little sort of B part on the back of the verse, which I always thought, I remember the first time I heard it, I thought it was so cool. What is that?
The structure of it, you mean?
Well, the second verse is a little bit different than the first verse. It has
the bar count is identical, and the chord changes are identical, and the melody's all but identical.
Really? Isn't there like a bit of a change before the second chorus?
No. You got me wondering at first, but I said no.
Second verse feels like it's got more of a lift into the second verse. Sounds like it's got more of a lift into the chorus, but I'm not sure what.
On Alanis' version, dynamically she probably lifts the intensity level going up. So but that's a dynamic question, not a compositional one.
Yeah, yeah.
Your
approach was much more subdued.
Yeah, I'm a subdued. So yeah, the out choruses are slightly different. There's a melodic lift, on the last chorus, the black velvet and that little boy smile. It's like it holds up a little bit longer than it does in all the other choruses. So that part is slightly different, and then it's just a straight sort of tag out from there.
And it's interesting. There's only two verses. I'm always thinking of, verse chorus bridge, verse chorus end. But I guess I'm starting to realize that's kind of a long song by these days.
Yeah, you could do that if you don't have a bridge, maybe, but it really depends.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes like the third verse, if you put some variations in it, is like a stand-in for a bridge.
Yeah.
Or you do a breakdown, which is kind of, has maintained some of the elements and leaves others out. Mm-hmm. So by omission, it sounds like a different section, and that you can call whatever you want,
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One of the things we did in terms of the record, though, I meant to mention to you guys was vocally, we did not do the stacking of vocal parts, which is, absolutely de rigueur right now. I mean, that's what happens. It's like, if two parts sound great, imagine how 16 will sound. And literally, it's like people stack and stack and stack and stack over to the point for me that there's a facelessness about a lot of background parts. They're exciting to the ears. They sound really good.
They're hyped.
But in this record, I mean, the two women who were singing, you only hear them once.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we may have had them get in and replace a part or something like that, but they only sing each part once. It's not multiple times. It's not stacked. Mm-hmm. It's just that, the way it is. And it was the same with the guitars. I mean, there's that tendency with electric guitars to go, if one sounds good, and then you could just keep stacking those like Mutt Lange style, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it was not that kind of record. And I think that's why
it would work for a song like this, because it is very intimate and, as you say, like front porch kind of feel.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I don't know. If you had a chorus of them.
Yeah. I mean, you said earlier, Christopher, that there was a lot of covers of the song. I don't know that I've heard many of them, but I imagine there's an EDM version of this song, but somehow, the way the lyric is, the way that groove is, which is it's so simple, but so pure. And I don't know how, modern production quantization could actually pull off that groove, those sorts of things. And you want it to be like this kind of, sultry, down in the earth kind of thing.
You're right.
And your approach to that is certainly right. But I don't know. I haven't heard.
Yeah, you nailed it. I mean, really, the versions that are out there are mostly female vocalists, and it's a bit of a showcase song for them as singers. Okay. It's a belter's paradise, that's what I hear most of the time, and that's why I obviously one of the reasons why I didn't try to do that.
Is this the only song on the album that you've revisited from the past? Everything else is new material?
There's about four songs that I've sort of written over the last 15 or 20 years at different times with different people. And then there's about half a dozen songs that I wrote just in the last year and a half or two.
Right. I was just curious about the significance of the title, Same River Twice, of the album.
It's an expression from a Greek philosopher, Heraclitus, from 400 BC. You can't step in the same river twice because it's not the same river and you are not the same man. And I don't know why I was convinced that that would make a good song lyric, but I had a little fun with it. So,
right. And that was the last question we had is what's the title of the album? But I guess
That's it. Same River Twice.
Yeah. And it's perfect. Being released very, very soon, three days' time. So,
all right,
so
May 28th on Warner Canada.
May 28th. Perfect.
Great success with it, Chris. Thank you very much.
Thank you for coming on the show, Christopher. And where can our listeners find out more about you?
Well, you go to ChristopherWarr.ca.
Perfect.
You can go on all the usual socials. I did a whole piece on Yacht Rock on my Facebook page this past week.
Check that out.
We had some fun with that. And there's a Bob Dylan tribute on my Facebook page too. So, right. Yeah.
Okay. Perfect. Okay. And of course, we'd like to hear from you, our devoted listeners. So please send us your comments on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram through @SongTalkRadio, or send us an email at feedback@songtalk.ca. And be sure to check out our YouTube channel for live performance videos and full episodes now that we're all in these little virtual boxes. It's great fun to see on your YouTube. And subscribe today to the Song Talk Radio podcast on your favorite podcast provider. And don't forget to sign up for our free newsletter at songtalk.ca. And you can find links to all the products, books, and web services we mentioned on the show on our resources page on the website. And wherever you are in the world, please join us online via Zoom at our next monthly Song Talk meetup. It's free to join on meetup.com and free to attend the meetup. Stop by songtalk.ca for the link. You can follow me at neilmodi.com. And you can follow Phil
at philemery.ca.
And you can follow Michael.
Proudfoot420 on Instagram.
Perfect. So excited about that.
And Christopher, sounds like Facebook is your favorite, so we'll say Facebook for Christopher.
Yeah, and the website. You can go to christopherwarr.ca if you like. Christopherwarr.ca. What a fun show, gentlemen. I mean, really, that's excellent.
Thank you very much for coming on.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Be sure to
stop by. We'll have you on again.
Song Talk.
I'm in.
Those past shows. Stay safe, everyone, and keep on writing.
Good night, everyone.
So long.